talking about, or the presentation is titled Music the Archway. This is something that I came up with, in January when Dusty first posted the request for talks. I had a vague idea of what I wanted to talk about. I listen to a lot of music, I have a large music collection. Linux is something that I've used for a long time to manage my music, in particular Arch. And so I wanted to talk about how I do that. Also, along the way, I kind of found that there's this unifying principle that doesn't just deal with the tools, but with the way Arch helps us work and why we like Arch, why we use Arch. And so I want to talk a little bit about that as well, and what is it that makes Arch unique. So Dusty, in his opening non-keynote, mentioned, you know, there's a lot of problems and a lot of disorganization, and there's a lot of issues with Arch that need our help. And I was thinking, what is it that drives us to constantly contribute to Arch and to constantly work on it and to constantly improve it? And I think part of it has to do with Arch being one of the few distributions that caters to what is known as the Arch way. And we'll talk about that in a little bit. So, before I get started on that, a little bit about me. I'm a Java developer working in Tokyo. I've been doing that for the last 2 years, been a Java developer for about the last four and a half years. I've been using Arch Linux for a long, long time, since 2004. So I haven't been an active member of the community until recently, but I've been a user since way back in the day when it was still Judd and Aaron was just some down form flaming people. No, he's a great guy. He actually helped me out a few times as well. So, but it's been great to watch Arch grow. I think we've come incredibly far. I think we have still further to go, and Arch has just been a pleasure. And I've gone from using it on one of my spare computers just to try it out to now I'm using it on my dev workstation at work. I use it for my servers, for helping friends host their websites. I use it for my media center, PCs, I use it for everything. And it's great because Arch is everything, it's whatever you want to make it. This presentation is going to focus on, particularly on managing music. I'm going to talk about how, when you have a large collection of data, in this case music, what the best way is to deal with it, whether it's to take an approach where you have this monolithic app, like, let's say, Goggle's Music Manager, or you take a more command line approach and use the file system to manage your files, and how that fits into the Arch philosophy. The key to this entire presentation, though, is simplicity and how to keep things simple, and really that's what Arch is. It's about simplicity, and I think that's really what drives us. So, music management today. If you talk to most people and you say, I have a music collection, or they have a music collection, usually this is the interface that they have to it. iTunes, or in some cases, if they're out of touch, the Windows Media Manager, or Media Player, whatever it is. And what these things do, they're big, they're full of features, they're supposed to be easy to use, but they're these big monolithic things with very rigid structures in an effort to simplify things. Usually everything is very GUI-centric, even in Linux distributions like Ubuntu. There's a constant drive for keeping things visual at the expense of flexibility. And also the UIs tend to be very captive. What I mean by the captive UI is that the UI has one way of interacting with it. It's not flexible. Everything is very rigidly structured, so there's not a lot of room for interacting with it in unique ways. There's always one path through the UI. And the other thing that I think this applies generally to Linux distributions and as well as web applications, and it's this bonsai buddy syndrome, as I to call it. It's the desire to constantly add features to software, regardless of whether it's needed or not, and to cover up design decisions with extra features. So, if, I don't know if any of you have downloaded iTunes recently, it's 98 megabytes. That seems quite large. I think our distro can fit into that. Why do we need something that large to do something so simple as play music and organize it? I'm not sure. And the other question is, do we want the bonsai body for everything, right? Do we want applications that do everything for us? I don't know. As archers, I don't think that's the case. And just to show you guys that this is not confined to Windows or Apple in particular, here's a web page that I pulled up talking about Linux music players. All right, and of course we have 15. We have 15 music players for every one music player on the other systems. And what they do is they clone the other systems. There we go. All right, we found it. So 15, and why are there 15, and why do they all look? This is taking a long load. You guys, I'm gonna have Steve Jobs moment here. Everybody, please turn down your turn off the wireless. All right. Okay, so anyway, so we have stuff like this. We have Rhythm Box, looks kind of like iTunes. We have Broken Images, Listen Project Songbird, No Music Player, looks a lot like iTunes. We have this BMPX, looks kind of like iTunes. And apparently you can watch or listen to the latest CNN news as well in your music player. That's fantastic. Then we have things like Sonata, which is nice. It's a little bit lighter. Anyways, the point being is there's a lot of similar looking interfaces crammed full of feature lists. If you look at every one of these, feature lists, feature lists, feature lists, feature lists. So they're cramming all of these things, all these functions into these programs to try to appease everybody's taste. This seems to be the way things are going in software. Okay, let's get out of this. So. Back to the point of this talk is, what is it that we're after? There's this group of people, I know a lot of you probably are aware of this, is pretty hot on the Arch forums. There's this group of people called the Suckless Developers. They write stuff like DWM. Anybody use DWM? I got some DWM users. They write things, basically what they do is they write very small, very simple tools, usually in C, to do very simple functions, right? DWM, as being an example, is just a window manager. It's a very small, very light window manager. And they've come up with a philosophy that goes back and builds on the Unix philosophy that we'll talk about in a minute, in that they see the software like iTunes, and they see software like the Ubuntu Package Manager and things like that. And they say, this is too much, we're going in the wrong direction. So, just to take a little excerpt here, because they worded it perfectly. In contrast to the usual proprietary software world, or many of the mainstream open source projects that focus more on average and non-technical end users, we think that experienced users are mostly ignored. This is us. We are the experienced users. This is particularly true for user interfaces, such as graphical environments on desktops, mobile devices, and so-called web applications. We believe that the market of experienced users is growing continuously, and each user is looking for more appropriate solution for his or her work style. Designing simple and elegant software is far more difficult than letting ad hoc or overambitious features obscure the code over time. This is key. I strongly believe, being in the software development environment, that we always allow, we fix our software not by looking at the design of the software, but by adding more features. And ultimately, that's not sustainable, and that's why I think a lot of software projects fail. I also think that's why we have a lot of Me Too mediocre clones. So, and as they mentioned here, one has to eventually pay the price to has to pay this price to achieve reliability and maintainability. Furthermore, minimalism results in reasonable and attainable goals. So we strive to maintain minimalism and clarity to drive the development to completion. Again, I think this is reflected in. Got these a little bit out of order. I think this is reflected clearly in the Arch player. And what is the Archway? What is it that makes Arch awesome? And what is it that brought us out here to Toronto today? I remember when this was originally posted, I think Judd had this up initially, correct me if I'm wrong. Dusty put it up. But he had something
Jewel.
Huh?
Jewel Misfit? Co-drafted this version of it.
This version, but what was it that he had something very similar beforehand, right?
I wrote that one too.
You wrote that one too. Alright, maybe it's my imagination. In any case, this exemplifies what Arch really is and why we work on Arch instead of working on Ubuntu or Gentoo or any other distro, and why it's worth it to work on Arch instead of those other distros. And the key here is simplicity, code correctness, focus on the user, keep it open and free, and most of all, keep it simple. That I do believe, or that's what I'm thinking of. The keep it simple, stupid, is, I think, the underlying principle of Arch Linux, and I think what drove Judd to start it. Again, correct me if I'm wrong.
To the best of my knowledge, he used that.
Right. I believe, because that was one of the first things I saw in the install guide, I believe, the first time I installed Arch Linux. So, really, Arch Linux is for that segment of users, like us, who know what they're doing. They want to do cool, powerful things, and they don't want to be constrained into a big monolithic framework for anything. Right? And I think you see that across the entire distribution, the way everything is decoupled, and the way all our tools are small and focused. And which brings us to the next point, which Arch keeps very much in line with the Unix way. And Jason talked about this, I want to reemphasize this point, because this is the core of Linux, and I think the soul of Arch, and the reason that Arch really exemplifies Linux or the Unix clone operating system. So the Unix philosophy is to write programs that do one thing and do it well. Think Pac-Man, think ABS, think any of the projects that are available. No, seriously, I mean, compare Pac-Man with something like apt-get or RPM, just on lines of code, you know? I bet you would see a significant difference. Exactly. And Pac-Man focuses, here's another interesting point. Pac-Man focuses very exclusively on one thing, and that's to get you packages and install them on your system. It doesn't try to even build them. We have another system for that. It's called MakePackage, right? So, that in mind, write programs to work together. And we do that, right? So we have MakePackage, we have Pac-Man. You build a package with MakePackage, build a package with MakePackage, and you shove it into Pac-Man and installs it on your system. So, whereas with RPMs and apt-get, I believe that there's deep-packaging. Well, anyways, going a little off topic. But there's a tendency to integrate things a little bit more.
You can't do the same thing with deep-packaging, except you have about 32 binaries to do the same thing as a package.
Okay, so there you go, right? So you're trying to cover up, I think what the developers were doing when they did this was they were trying to cover up some design flaws with additional features. So the other part is write programs to handle text streams because that is the universal interface. And I think Arch embodies that in the way we handle our configuration files, right? What do we say in our installation docs? We say Arch is supposed to be configured mostly through command line in a default fashion. We don't try to write GUIs to do configuration for you. We don't try to write graphical installers to hold your hand. We keep things simple, and what's really cool about that is we get things like what Tim presented, where he took, and with Batch, he wrote this whole installation system for managing all these different servers, and he built it on top of our installation system by using, this universal text interface, like our rc.conf, right? He just goes through there, pulls out the array, grabs the variables he needs, and is able to process and install his system the way he wants it to. Now imagine trying to do that with Ubuntu. It's not going to happen, right? So this is the thing, and this is the Unix way, and it's very powerful, and it's being, I think, it's used in some places, in universities, there's some of this in research labs, but for the mainstream user or consumer, this doesn't exist, and this is why Arch exists, to fill that need for us. Okay, so that being said, let's see how this applies, not just to the installer. This can be applied to a lot of different aspects of Arch Linux. One in particular, to stick to my original topic, is we're going to take a look at music management and how somebody who doesn't have iTunes installed and wants to do things in a more Unix-centric way would manage their music, something that's a common task today. The RIPACs, good example of features that are often integrated into music players. There are libraries, there are ways to convert it, and in Arch it's pretty simple, because what do we really want to do? What is our use case with a CD ripper? Is we want to take CD and convert it into some binary data on our machine that we can read, or digital audio data on our machine that we can read. So there are probably a ton of different graphical tools to do this, but one simple way. Sorry, let me pull this. I'm used to this machine access sharing. So probably one of the easiest ways is just to make a directory in my CD, whatever it is, right? And so we put the CD-ROM drive, we hit that, and it does what it does quickly, efficiently, reliably, and in a way that uses the text interface. So this is an example of a Unix type of program. What's that?
It also does it with smiley faces.
Yes, you know. By the way, I think that my girlfriend was did you see Rhythmbox? It has a service running, or there's something running, a service in the background saying, do you want to rip a CD? How many resources is that taking up all the time? Not many times I rip a CD in the lifetime of my install. Probably not too many. So that's the thing, they're always adding these conveniences and features which seem nice on paper, but they end up tying up resources, which makes other programs slower. It makes it more difficult to interface and create things like D-Bus and all these things to talk to each other and do all these things. And the question is, what is it that you really want to accomplish, right? And all we want to do is rip a CD. That's what we're doing. And if we want to combine features, and I'll talk to about that a little bit more here in a bit, is we just take these simple programs that do these functions very well, and we pipe them together, you know, we string them together. Again, to reference Tim's previous presentation where he took this existing infrastructure and he glued it together. But he relied on the fact that the infrastructure is very simple and does a very specific function very well and does it in a transparent way. This might take a little bit. Let's at least get one track in here. Once we got that. Alright, so what's the next step? So we're going to go through the process here of we just bought a CD at the store, we come home, we pop it in. First thing we do, we CD paranoid, we rip it. as we're ripping it. Alright, so it's giving us these WAV files. Great. So now we kind of want to label them, right? Because later on we're... Yeah, you guys probably can't see that too much.
I don't know
about
it.
It's good. Perfect. There you go.
Yeah, okay. So we're starting to rip them, but we have a little problem here, is they're labeled pretty generically. And they're these WAV things, which are huge. First thing we're going to do is talk a little bit about lossless compression. So what is lossless compression? Lossless compression is, everybody uses a zip file, everybody uses a tar file. That's lossless compression. It's when you put in data, you find an algorithm that shrinks it down in a way that it can expand it back out without losing any of that data. So what you put in is what you get back out. But the nice thing about it is it finds it finds commonalities. Like for example, if you're compressing a text file, in the English language, the letter E is often used. So that there's techniques for replacing the character E with or the
tokenizes repeated items. So
yes. completely small. What was it? Yeah, it makes it small.
It makes it small.
It makes it small. Let's leave it at it.
So you don't have it 300 times, therefore it makes the file smaller.
Yeah.
Yes, that's correct. So basically, the key point about lossless compression is whatever data you compress, when you uncompress it, you're going to get the same exact thing back.
You don't lose any information.
You don't lose any information, that's right. So that is lossless compression. The opposite of that is, sorry, this is a little text. The opposite of that is lossy compression. Lossy compression also compresses data, but it does it in a way that maybe strips off some information. So the simplest form of lossy compression is to just, let's say, drop the last byte of a file. All right, you've just compressed it a little bit, but you've lost some information in the process. The nice thing about lossy compression is it tends to be, it creates noticeably better or more compressed files than lossless compression does. Examples of loss compression are MP3s, JPEGs, things like that, right? You wouldn't want to use loss compression for data that you don't want. So if you're writing a term paper or you're writing a document, you don't want to use loss compression on that. But there are some things like, for example, an image. If you take an image and you take out every third pixel, it'll probably still look like that image and will still probably be acceptable, but be much smaller. So that's lossy compression. And both of these apply to music files. So for music, there's both lossless compression and lossy compression. And you can choose which one you want to use with your files, because WAV files are huge. And so we want to avoid that. So a couple of examples of lossy compressions that are well known to everybody are MP3. Everybody knows MP3. And the other one that we love to preach in the Linux universe is ogwarpus. Is that how you pronounce it? Ogwarpus is just like MP3, except it's open and patent free. One key thing here to note is there's actually two things that are being referenced here. Ogg is the container, and Warvis is the actual audio codec. Just throw that in there because you will hear that. Okay, so let's take a look at doing some of this using simple Unix-like tools. It looks like our thing finished. So, here's our tracks. So we pipe these into. So let's say we want to. First, we want to do lossless compression on it. There's this tool. Don't look over there. Look over here. So let's say that I've already pre-ripped some stuff here, so we get this list of ripped songs. We should do FLAC. And we specify there's a trade-off between how much time you want to spend decoding the file or how intensive you want the algorithm to be versus how compressed you want the file to be. So at the lowest level, FLAC 1, let's say, the compression isn't going to be too strong, so the file is still going to be fairly large, but when you go to decompress the file, the mathematical operations are going to be very light on the CPU. Whereas if you go with something like FLAC 8, you get better compression, but it's a little bit more CPU intensive when you go to decode. So this illustrates something. So in most standalone tools, these kinds of features are obscure. Right? You don't get access to these sort of things. Sure, you can expose it via options and other such mechanisms, but it often isn't. When you fire up iTunes and you rip a CD and it compresses it for you, you don't get to make any of these decisions. Which might seem like, well, who cares, right? You'll just get some MP3 in the end and it's probably good enough. Sure, but let's say you have a player that has a limited amount of space on it, or you know that it's an old player and it has a very old CPU. You might want to make the decision to maybe either make it more compressed or less compressed, depending on your needs and which you have more, CPU processing power or disk storage, right? But this is a decision that I think users can, especially intelligent users, can make, and it greatly benefits them in the long run and gives them more flexibility, whereas that's obscured by more monolithic solutions. So let's do that. And